since 1775, generations of Americans have fought for our ideals and our principles. American warriors secured the freedoms to create the United States of America. They fought to end slavery. They joined with allies to win two world wars. They have responded with valor and honor whenever called. And they have liberated more people around the globe than any military in the history of the world. Our all-volunteer forces of guardsmen, soldiers, sailors, marines, airmen, and reservists continue the mission begun at Lexington and Concord. Less than 1% of Americans serve in our armed forces. The least the rest of us can do is to pay attention and get engaged. This program is produced and broadcast for that purpose. It is presented live and worldwide at 1041kqth.com. To engage, call 520-751-1041. The American Warrior is on the air.
Good afternoon, folks. Welcome to another episode of American Warrior Radio. Let's start off as we usually do with this week in military history. This week in 1965, the first 4,000 paratroopers from the 101st Airborne Division arrived in Vietnam, landing at Cam Ranh Bay. During their service in Vietnam, the division suffered almost 20,000 soldiers killed or wounded, and troopers from the 101st were awarded 17 Medals of Honor for bravery in combat. The 101st was also among the last Army divisions to leave Vietnam. Good afternoon, folks. Your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Speaking of Vietnam, we're very, very pleased to have a guest today that's going to help us carry on the gladiator and warrior theme. He was the first man to win both the Heisman Trophy and the Super Bowl Most Valuable Player. He played 11 seasons with the Dallas Cowboys and led the team to the Super Bowl five times, including victories in Super Bowl VI and Super Bowl XII. In fact, he coined the phrase the Hail Mary Pass. Now, if you know pro football, and heck, even if you don't know pro football, you'll know his name. But what you might not know is that he served 5 years in the United States Navy and he volunteered to go to Vietnam. Welcome to American Warrior Radio, Roger Staubach.
It's great to be on, Ben.
Well, sir, what a pleasure to have you on American Warrior Radio. I'm willing to bet that even some of the most diehard football fans don't know that you're a Navy veteran.
Well, I'm an old guy, so they'd have to Google me to figure that out. Yeah.
Well, now come on, Mr. Staubach, you're not that old. Now listen, it's interesting looking at your growing up, and our topic, sir, is we had a guest on several months ago who talked about the distinction he made. He was an Army Ranger medic who was also a mixed martial arts fighter. And he made a distinction between gladiators who put on a uniform to entertain and warriors who put on a uniform to defend the country. And you are unique in some ways in that you've worn the uniform for both reasons.
Well, that's true, and I, you know, in the service, I'm proud of my time in the Navy, and I wouldn't categorize myself as a gladiator. I was a logistics officer, supply officer. I was partially colorblind, actually. When I say partially, I knew all the colors. I just hadn't associated the names with them yet or something. But whatever it was, I failed my little dot test at the Fitzsimmons Army Hospital in Denver, Colorado. But they missed seeing the dots, and they actually passed me. And so when I got to the Naval Academy, I had my physical, and they said, "Gee, man, you don't get all these numbers right." That's when I did the numbers thing, and I said, "No, I got a little problem there." So that kind of stayed with me until I graduated, and I was limited into what I could do in the service. But I was proud to get a chance to be. I stayed in the Navy side and became a supply officer.
Now, sir, we're broadcasting from a desert community. We got lots of beach, but not much ocean. We do have our very own submarine, the USS Tucson. But just in case, explain to people why it's important in the naval service to be able to recognize colors.
Well, yeah, as a line officer, there's you have some signaling and things that relate to colors, and so any in flying also, I was definitely ineligible there. I could have been wavered into the Marine Corps, and that was very tempting. In fact, I was, you know, they really wanted me to go in the Marine Corps, and I probably would have played football with the Quantico Marines, and then, you know, been in the service, and then probably ended up in Vietnam as a Marine later on. But initially, that's why they were So at the Naval Academy, the Marines are unbelievable. They're great. And actually, when I was in Vietnam, we supported the Marines. I was with the Naval Support Group in Da Nang. And so I'm a big Marine fan. But I really was limited to where I could pick. So I decided to stay on the Navy side. And when you were a midshipman at Navy, you pretty well knew you were going to be a Marine. They were running around their fatigues at about 4 a.m. with their combat boots. so I think the world of the Marine Corps, and it was a privilege for me to be in the support role when I was in Vietnam.
Well, sir, let's talk about that. Let's back up a little bit. You grew up in around Cincinnati, Ohio, and then you, from Cincinnati, Ohio to Roswell, New Mexico is quite a jump. You went there to attend the New Mexico Military Institute. What was it? Were you originally interested in a career in the military, or what got you from Cincinnati to New Mexico?
Well, my senior year in high school, I played quarterback. I was a defensive back all my junior year, and so I had a good year as a quarterback, and so I was being recruited by a few schools, and I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do, and so Navy came along and talked to me about maybe possibly going to the Naval Academy and spending a year in junior college. It was like being a redshirt year or something. And so they had about 20 of us that went down to New Mexico Military Institute, which turned out to be, it's a great school. And it was one of the best things I ever did. And I almost can't believe I did it at the time. I never had left Cincinnati, and I was an only child with my parents. My dad was real sick. And so I went to Roswell, and it was great academically, and I had another year of being a football player, and we had a really good team there. So it was a combination of still not really sure what I want to do, but I thought I wanted to go to Navy. And if you graduated there with a B average, you were able to go to the Naval Academy. So we were sent there, though. There's about 20 of us, Air Force, Army, and Navy, that were athletes that were positioned to possibly go to the academies, and it just turned out to be a great year for me. I'm glad I did it, and I learned more at being a quarterback, and I also learned more about the discipline of the military before I became a plebe at the Naval Academy.
Well, and we're going to talk a little bit more about how that made a difference further on in your career, but just, sir, let me just clarify. So one of the best quarterbacks ever in the history of football didn't actually start throwing the ball until his senior year in high school? Am I getting that right?
Yeah, that's okay. I was really switched to quarterback, but I didn't play in my junior year. I played all defense, and we had a senior quarterback, and so my senior year was the first year I really had a chance to be a quarterback. I had played baseball all 4 years in high school. I actually played baseball in college. So the coach said, when he switched me to quarterback, he said, which I didn't want to do, actually, he just said that, the other guys listen to you, and I know you got a good arm because I've watched you play baseball. So it really turned out to be, changed my life, because I don't think we'd be talking here right now if I wasn't switched to quarterback.
Well, I'll tell you, sir, I've been to Roswell, New Mexico, and luckily there's not a whole lot to get you into trouble in Roswell, New Mexico. So,
yeah, they had the Walker Air Force Base there. That's how far I go back.
Oh, boy. So, wow, okay.
Roswell's a great school, by the way. I mean, it was a junior college, and I was homesick when I got there, but when I left, I appreciated Roswell.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller-Garcia. We're speaking with Roger Staubach, who I'm sure you know from his football career and his business success. What you might not know is that he also served 5 years in the United States Navy and volunteered to go to Vietnam. Mr. Staubach, we've got about 3 minutes left before the first break. I mean, life as a midshipman at the Naval Academy is different than what most people experience. But I'm guessing it was also a little bit extra different, given that you were playing football. Your first game against the University of Minnesota didn't go so well, did it?
No. And, you know, Ben, by the way, you know, I was, because of going to Roswell, I was drafted as a junior at Navy. I was drafted then by Dallas and Kansas City in late rounds. So that's where, so I really had my first class senior at Navy. I was actually in the service. My obligation was 4 years, but I, you know, everybody, they, because I was drafted, they thought it was that I was drafted a junior. So I still had my first class year and 4 years. So anyway, I served 4 years in active duty in the Navy. So.
Well, if someone's going to correct me, I think Roger Staubach's a good person to correct me.
Well, the Vikings. Well, I tell you, I got off to, I was just a backup quarterback to Craig Morton. And so
never heard of him.
We were getting beat pretty good, and so when I went in the game, it didn't get any better. So, but I was able to make up for it in 1975 with a Hail Mary pass up in Minnesota when we beat the Vikings, and Drew Pearson made this great catch, and Nate Wright kind of slipped. You're a Viking fan.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I didn't realize that you actually coined the phrase, the Hail Mary pass, that is used in everything from football to, frankly, the military nowadays.
Well, the Associated Press, supposedly, when I was in the locker room, just they asked what was I thinking. I said I closed my eyes and said a Hail Mary, and I believe it was an AP writer that kind of used that as a term, Hail Mary pass, wins game. It used to be the bomb or the alley-oop or but it was a last-second desperation play, and being a Catholic kid from Cincinnati, I did mention that I just closed my eyes and said a Hail Mary, and the NFL recognized that as the first time it was used in the NFL, and it really wasn't used much in for anything else other than the rosary. So, I'm kind of proud of that, actually, that it took off as it's kind of used for last-second heroics now for almost everything.
Now, Mr. Staubach, I know you probably weren't prepared for a quiz, but who was the last player from the Naval Academy to win the Heisman Trophy? Do you recall?
Oh, the last player in the Heisman Trophy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess that's me.
There you go. He is the last person from the Naval Academy to win the Heisman Trophy. Folks, our guest is Roger Staubach.
Yeah, Joe Bellino is really the other person, too, in Navy. He was a few years before me, but Joe and I were Heisman Trophy winners at Navy.
Okay. Very good. So, folks, your host, Ben Dula-Garcia. We're with Roger Staubach. We're talking about gladiators and warriors. We'll be right back after this message. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior, folks. Your host, Ben Dula-Garcia. Very proud to have a gentleman on the line with us here on American Warrior Radio. Now, I will make a confession here. Back when I was a kid, we bought one of those gosh-awful vibrating little football games, and you get to pick the teams. I picked the Rams because I was a Roman Gabriel fan, and my brother picked the Cowboys because he was a Cowboys fan. But oddly enough, the Cowboys always seemed to win in that game. Our guest today is probably part of the reason for that, Roger Staubach, who played with the Cowboys for 11 seasons, was also a Navy veteran. Mr. Staubach, welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Let's talk a little bit about how, at a time, sir, when a lot of young men were doing everything they could to avoid going to Vietnam, you volunteered to go to serve in Vietnam.
Well, when I graduated, I was a supply officer. I had to go to school, and in Vietnam was getting, that was 1965 when I graduated, and so I stayed at the Naval Academy. I was stationed there for a few months, and then I went off to Athens, Georgia, and the Vietnam War, so that was in 66, and it was kind of heating up, and I felt I wanted to do, something that was associated with the Vietnam War, so I did volunteer to go there. I had a very important role there. We were supporting the Marine Corps. I was in the Naval Support Group in Da Nang, where I was stationed for 6 months. Then I went down to Chu Lai, but I used to go to Quang Nai. I used to go out down to Saigon a lot, and so I kind of traveled around Vietnam. And in the I Corps area of Vietnam at that time, the Marines occupied all the I Corps area in South Vietnam, and And those were the guys that had a lot of Marine friends, and some of them were teammates and classmates, and they would kind of give me a hard time as far as I wasn't out there in the rice paddies with them, but I had a very important role with the Navy, and was proud of supporting the Marines. I think the Marines are like special ops people. They're the ones that I really interface with when I was in Vietnam.
Well, and certainly, sir, we've done a couple shows about logistics, and we understand that the soldiers and the Marines and the airmen and the sailors can't fight if they're not getting bullets and butter. So no discounting the role you played. Now, how long were you in country, sir?
I was there a year. I was just about 6 months in Da Nang, and then I got in charge of all the shipping. These LSTs would come into Chu Lai, and we'd offload all the LSTs. I had about, maybe 60 military working and 60 Vietnamese. I had a lot of responsibility, and what we did was offload all the LSTs and then ship out they'd load them up. We'd outload the pallets onto the trucks, and then the trucks would go out to the various Marine bases. We had Marine, had pilots down there. We're surrounded by the Marine Corps. So we would ship everything out to, the Marines. And my job was to oversee all that. And I worked for, Commander James in Chu Lai.
Now, I read an interview, sir, that you did with the Stars and Stripes on October 16th, 1966. And, it strikes me from everything I've read and everything I heard that this really talks about the kind of man you are. You were quoted in that story as saying, "This story you write about me won't go back to the States. It's just for Stars and Stripes," right? Do you remember saying that?
Yes,
and I guess work me through the timeline, because that had to, at that point in time, had you already been drafted by the Cowboys?
Yeah, I was drafted after my second class or junior year at the Naval Academy. I was eligible for the draft because I had that year in junior college. So it was, it wasn't a big event by any means. I was drafted by the leagues were still two. There were still two leagues, and I was drafted by Kansas City and Dallas. So, but when I graduated, both teams wanted me to sign a commitment that if I ever played again, and I didn't, I obviously one of the teams had talked to me about trying to leave after my junior year and play, and of course, Gil Brandt was the Cowboy scout that went to see my mother in Cincinnati and said, Rogers, he could probably get out of his junior year and not go, he play for the Cowboys, and she threw him out of the house. Gil tells that story all the time, so I'm not, and so there was no way in the world was I going to try to, but I was eligible, at the time, because I was, was drafted as a junior, so the confusion took place there as far as, the 4 years. But it did lead into me. They both talked to me, and I agreed that if I would ever play again, I'd play for the Cowboys. So that they actually paid me $500 a month for doing that, which I was allowed to do. A Navy legal officer said, "Oh, yeah, that's fine. You don't have to leave the service. You don't, But if you leave after your obligation, which I did. So 4 years later, I did join the Cowboys, and so Gil Brandt actually, when I was in Vietnam, he used to send me film over there, and I would show it to the Marines, and they got a kick out of that.
Well, now, sir, I got to tell you, when I was promoting this interview, I had someone on social media say, that Roger Staubach, he's the reason I'm still a Cowboys fan to this day. And I believe that what you just talked about there, it shows the kind of man you are. I mean, you had an oath, a commitment to our country first, and football second.
Well, that's true, and I don't want to be corny or anything, and if I really was tempted to try to fight the leaving after my junior year, which I would have, I'd be doing stuff like that the rest of my life. Mm. It wasn't even, of course, being an only child, my mother was very strong-willed, and the 5 years, I had my first class year, then four more years, went by. So I was 27 when I had a chance to play again, and it worked out. And I was very fortunate to be drafted by the Dallas Cowboys, and Don Meredith retired also when I left the service. So I got a chance to stay in Dallas, and I played behind Craig Morton for a couple years. So it turned out to be a great, fantastic football team, and we had a good team in the 70s, but I was always proud. I mean, my close friends are Naval Academy guys. When I was in Vietnam, I was in station at I was in Camp Tinshaw with Larry Graham and Eddie Gill were Navy SEALs that were the SEALs were program was kind of getting going back then, and you know the SEALs are, everybody knows about the SEALs now, but they would see me at the, I'd meet them at Camp Tinshaw, and I'd say, hey, what are you guys, where were you guys? Well, we can't talk about it, but we know you weren't doing anything. I said, well, yeah. And then Tommy Holden was a classmate of mine that he got a hold of me from the, he was out there in getting shot at, and phoned in and said, I'm going to come into Da Nang in a couple of weeks. I want to take you to the Oak Club, you lazy old, you know, mm-hmm. He called me something in a funny way. And Tommy then was shot and killed. And, so there's Vietnam, our troops, what they did there, Ben, and what they were asked to do by this country was to go and fight for this country. And it is, you know, everybody knows it was a horrendous reception that got worse as far as taking it out on the veterans themselves, and you know obviously the politicians in our country sent us over there, so it was a difficult time, and we were in our class at the Naval Academy, and we were kind of right in the middle of it. And fortunately today, as you know, and I that we get up every day, and we are thankful for our veterans and what they're doing for us, and what a big difference it makes when you know a veteran knows that you care about them. And so Vietnam was a difficult time as far as receiving our veterans in the proper way.
Well, I'd like to chat with that a little bit more after the break. Folks, we're joined on the phone by Roger Staubach. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Roger, before, when we come back, I'd like to just stick in Vietnam for just a second there. You stayed football sharp, as I understand it. You were throwing the ball back and forth with a former teammate, Fred Marlin, who, now, was he a Marine or was he Navy?
No, Fred was Navy. He was actually the captain of the Navy football team, when my first class year. So we were over there together. So I didn't really stay sharp in Vietnam at all. But we did have every once in a while, you know, someone would have a football, or at Camp Tinshaw, I might be throwing the ball. And when I went down to Chu Lai, there was a little field over there but when I got stationed at Pensacola, I had a little better chance of staying in shape.
Well, I'll tell you, Fred said that in your SEER class, out of a class of 47 people, you two were the only people to escape the mock POW camp. I want you to tell that story when we come back. Once again, folks, your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, very proud to be joined by Roger Staubach. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back, folks, to American Warrior Radio. Your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, very, very pleased to be joined on the phone by Roger Staubach. You know his name from his NFL career. He's a very successful businessman in Texas, but he also served with the Navy. I thought it was 5 years. I've been corrected. It was 4 years. I might even got that wrong, but he went from Ensign Staubach to Captain. Would it be Captain America, Captain Comeback? Which one do you prefer, Mr. Staubach?
Well, that's a good try, Ben. I went from Ensign to in the Navy, it's Lieutenant, and of course in the Marine Corps, I would have been a Captain. In the Navy, Captain is higher ranked than the Lieutenant, but I went from Ensign to JG to Lieutenant.
Okay. So to translate it for our Air Force friends here in Tucson, you went from lieutenant to colonel. Well, Colonel Comeback. That still has a ring to it. We're just having fun here. What now? You did enter the NFL as a 27-year-old rookie, which I'm guessing by any standard makes you kind of an old man going in. Do you think though that to some extent, your what you learned in the military and leading men in the Navy turned out to be an advantage in your NFL career, sir?
Oh, yes, it was an advantage. In fact, Coach Landry, he wasn't crazy about, rookie quarterbacks didn't get a whole a lot of chances. And I think when Don Meredith retired, I took 2 weeks leave to go to Dallas training camp when I was stationed in Pensacola. So they, I was able to show that I could possibly still play again. But the thing he mentioned, he said, is your maturity and your experience is, and I think they would have drafted they would have traded for another veteran quarterback to play behind Craig. But because of that 2 weeks of going to training camp, and also he mentioned my military service, that he felt that I could fill in for Craig Morton when I had to. So that was a big deal to just stay as the backup quarterback that first year as a rookie, 27-year-old rookie who hadn't played for 4 years. So yeah, it meant a big difference on the maturity that you have as a in the military, the teamwork, the hard work, the perseverance, the things that the military teaches you. And that's why today, our Vietnam vets today are really out there in the middle of helping, everything that's taken place since Vietnam and in the wars that we've been in. And the reception today on, I have this organization, Allies in Service, we're helping veterans get jobs here in Dallas, Fort Worth. And the qualities of the teamwork, the hard work, the trust, there's just so many great things that you learn in the military and that our veterans have that are transferable into the business world. And getting a veteran a job today is it's so important for all of us to have a job. So the veterans can really transfer their military to the business world too. It takes some time to transfer, but the ingredients are there, Ben, and they're great ingredients. I mean, that the military veteran brings to the business world also.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that, sir, if you don't mind. I shouldn't guess. You mentioned before the break that for many veterans coming back from the war, the reception here stateside was not ideal. In many cases, it was, in my opinion, outright disgusting. For you coming back, coming out of the Navy, well, you came back, then you, but I mean, you're the kind of guy who I'm guessing would walk through an airport and people would recognize. Were you treated that way as well, or did you think you had a little bit of a different experience?
No, it was a negative thing on Vietnam. Even my teammates, they'd give me a hard time about Vietnam. And then Vietnam became more controversial as far as being over there and by 69 and 70 and 71. But it had not, it shouldn't have had anything to do with the men and women that were asked to go over there to fight for this country. They were doing what this country asked them to do. I mean, you can't rebel against the country and say, hey, I'm not going over there. And at the beginning, I think we looked at Vietnam, whether it was stopping the spread of communism in Southeast Asia, there were some good reasons, but it the reasons for being over there started to diminish. But it wasn't the troops. The troops were asked to be there, and that's what really was the shame of it. That I think the American people today recognize, even if they disagree with Iraq or I think Afghanistan after 9/11, we've been more into it. But I think now there's been some controversy. How long should we go? But the American people today are doing everything to make our veterans feel good. Overall, I think it's so much more positive, and it's the right thing. I was in the airport not long ago, and a bunch of veterans were in fatigues, and so one of them knew me. I guess.
Yeah. Well.
So I went over and talked to him, and then this woman came over and gave him three $100 bills while I'm talking to this guy, and he said, no, we don't. And she said, take your guys to lunch, And so then he says to me, he said, it's not the $300 that she gave me to go to lunch. It's the fact that people care about us, mm-hmm. and what a difference it makes when you go fight the fight for your country, and then everybody cares about you. You know, that's, you're a human being, and it makes a difference. And so I think we learned a lot from Vietnam, and I think our Vietnam veterans are, they're smack in the middle of the love, care, and concern they're having for our veterans today.
Well, we've got a couple minutes here for the next break. Folks, our guest is Roger Staubach here on American Warrior Radio. Sir, let's follow up that theme, though, because you're doing some things specifically through Allies in Service to support our veterans today. But what other things do you believe that the Vietnam-era veterans can do to support those currently serving or that are veterans from the most recent wars? I mean, we've got men and women out there that have, we've been in a shooting war for all practical purposes for almost three decades.
Well, our Vietnam veterans are going to hospitals. They're going, I mean, they're all over the place when there's an event. Allies in Service, Admiral Mullen asked me to, a number of years ago, to, he's had a lot to do with the private sector getting more involved with our veterans. And so it took me a while, the time-wise and everything. So I started Allies in Service, and I've got seven people that we don't raise money, and so it's a 501(c). But my company I work with gives me office space, and so I got seven people that are helping veterans every day here in Dallas, Fort Worth, hopefully to try to get a job, and we got a mentoring program, and there's a whole lot of that going on. A company or people trying to do, the private sector trying to do more for our veterans. As you know, there's been controversy with the VA, and you know, as far as being able to do enough for our veterans, and I just don't think we can do too much for our veterans, and I know there's some areas that things aren't being taken care of the way they should, but there's still a lot of people out there, and including our allies in service, that are trying to do the right thing for veterans. And the job side is where our focus is. And we've been averaging almost a job a day with veterans here in the Dallas. It's the Dallas-Fort Worth area is where we're focused on.
And I've got folks that are going to be listening in Dallas, sir, I'm sure. So it's Allies in Service. What is the website, or how can they?
There's a website that they can go for Allies in Service.
Okay. And you know what? I can look that up, and I'll let folks know. I'll definitely post that. But you help veterans in the Dallas area, employment, housing, education, and even health care if necessary, correct?
Yeah, well, the healthcare, we kind of refer to others that are doing that. You know, you try to do too much, and so yeah. Ours is really focused on. And we have about 25 companies that are mentoring veterans that are fantastic. I mean, these are companies that have a protege, and then somebody that's really helping mentor. So that's what we're focused on. But we're able to refer our veterans to other organizations that we interface with. So the good news is there's quite a bit cooking in the private sector to really show our appreciation for veterans. And our website, though, it's alliesinservice.org. So,
okay. Allies in Service, A-L-L-I-E-S, and service.org.
Alliesinservice.org,
Perfect. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Ben Bueller-Garcia. We're talking with Roger Staubach. We'll be right back.
We're doing that because we're not raising money, though, Ben. So I gave you that for veterans to call our site. I didn't do that.
I'm glad you clarified that.
We're not raising money. So
okay, stick around, folks. We'll be right back. That's the second time I've been corrected by Roger Staubach. Stick around, your host Ben Bueller-Garcia.
Well, you're pretty close.
we're having some fun. We'll be right back, folks. Welcome back, folks. Last segment of American Warrior. It's always great when you've got a good guest. The time just flies by. Our guest today is a Navy veteran. Also a very successful business owner, and I think he played a little football somewhere down the line as well. I had two Super Bowl championships. Our guest is Roger Staubach. Roger, we were talking, you know, it's interesting. We haven't talked that much about football today, and that's appropriate given the subject matter of this show and our folks that are listening. You alluded to Allies in Service And I want to clarify, that's alliesinservice.org. You're not looking for donations, but that is a great network, a support network for those veterans who might be listening today or might listen to the podcast that are in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, a support network for them to go to find help and employment in other areas, correct?
That's correct. And then, and we are also able to help them with other organizations that we're familiar with, because we're at a lot of job fairs and we interface a lot with a lot of the things going on with veterans programs here. But what we do is primarily helping on jobs, and also we do have a mentor program that we have and JLL, the company I work for, they provide office space for me, and so we're privately funded, so we're a 501(c).
And that's something that's important, because when you retired from the Cowboys, I believe it was in 1979.
79, uh-huh.
You went on the spring of 80,
uh-huh.
Okay. You went on to a very successful business career in real estate. You're currently the executive chairman for, you mentioned Jones Lang LaSalle Americas, billions of dollars in revenues. So you understand what it's like, or the importance of having the resource that a good employee is to a company. So if you wouldn't mind, sir, talk a little bit about what a great resource these men and women coming out of our military are, and why it's important for employers to think about hiring them.
Yeah, and the I had my own company, the Staubach Company, for over 30 years, and mm-hmm. So JLL bought us about 8 years ago, and we, having a life after football was important. Of course, we had three children born in the Navy, so I worked in the off season a little bit, so I was able to get started in the real estate business. But today the things we're doing, say with Allies, that the veterans, first of all, the veterans, they got so much pride, they don't ask for anything, and so it's amazing on the job side. They bring trust, integrity, they bring hard work. There's no traffic jams on the extra mile, and veterans give that extra, and they really understand that. They understand teamwork. I think of veterans' life as adversity reveals genius and prosperity conceals it. You find out the best in people when times are tough, and veterans will be there when you need them. And so there's just so many good qualities that are transferable, but it's matching up that job, whether it's a technology job or whatever it is the challenge, to be sure that the veteran, and we're also helping the veteran spouse here with Allies and on the job side. So there's a lot of really great qualities that the veteran brings, and companies are seeing it. We've got some wonderful responses back from our veterans who are working for certain companies, and then there's also some, sometimes it doesn't totally work out for that particular company, but the most important thing for veteran after leaving the service is to get a good job.
Well, and I've had clients, sir, that I know, one is a mining company, and said, look, we hire veterans all day long because they can pass a drug test, they're disciplined, they show up when they say they're going to show up, and by the way, they're already trained.
Yeah.
Allies in Service sounds very intriguing. Is on the board, have you ever discussed replicating that program in other markets?
Well, the thing for me is, I don't want to do something, that until we do it right. And it's been 3 years now, and we are doing a lot of things right. And JLL's got offices around the country. We've looked at trying to replicate what we're doing in the other markets, because we do have offices, our company, in other markets. And JLL has been real. I'm also on the JP Morgan Military Advisory Board, and there's a lot of companies that are out there helping veterans get jobs. There's a whole big list of, there's well over 200 companies now that, and Jamie Dimon and Matt Sames of JP Morgan are they are so sincere about what they're doing for veterans. It's amazing. So when I got on that advisory board, I've been really proud of that. And so there's a lot of companies out there now wanting to hire veterans. And you know, Allies, we can refer to, you know, a lot of those companies we're referring our veterans to. And JLL is one company. We're trying to hire more veterans here. We just hired a good Navy guy not too long ago. And so the good news, there's activity out there. And the other good news is that if you hire a veteran, you're getting a good employee.
There you go. Now, real quick, we've got just a couple minutes left, sir, but there's something I want to touch on. You tell me if it's appropriate or not. When you were looking at, as I understand it, as you're looking at retiring, the Cowboys offered you a two-year extension, but at that point, you had already had 20 discussions. I read an interesting story about after one game, you were driving home with your wife, and is she a nurse, sir, or?
She was a nurse.
She was a nurse, uh-huh. and she's looking at your eyes and saying, "Look, there's an issue here." So you were smart to get out early. Have you ever given any thought as a veteran, as someone who's experienced brain injury, about the traumatic brain injury and how big of an issue that is for our veterans coming back from their injuries overseas today?
Yeah, and you know, the PTSD and all the there's a lot of issues, and you know, you saw the Wall Street Journal the other day. I mean, mm-hmm. I am sick when I even think about it. The number of veterans that have committed suicide, and you know, they got to be proud of who they are and what they've done, but they have that whatever causes that issue is. It's really a serious issue right now on veterans on suicides. And you know I didn't have my first game. Ray Nitschke knocked me out my very first game I played in for the Dallas. It was an exhibition game, and so I had 6 concussions where I was knocked out. So the 20, you get these dingers, which are really mm-hmm. concussions, Ben. And today they recognize where you get confused and you're. But you know, when I say 6, where I was knocked out, where I was. You know, I couldn't. I was on the ground, and I got up. I didn't know where I was. Those are. You know, today you would not. I would probably not have gone back and played in the next week's game. Now, the next day, I was feeling better. And if even the dingers today, when you get confused in the game, those are concussions. So they are definitely trying to do more in the NFL on dealing with concussions. And I really hope and pray that our VA hospitals and if the veterans have to go to the private sector, the government will take care of them to make sure that they don't have some of those, whether it's the PTSD or things that have happened in the service that would cause them to even think about taking their life. It makes me. I mean, I didn't know it was that bad, to be honest with you, until the recent articles that I saw in the Wall Street Journal about veteran suicides.
Well, I tell you, sir, we're going to do a show on it in the future because it comes up with a lot of the warriors that we speak to and the veterans. And interestingly enough, one of the best private sector institutions that's working with traumatic brain injury is there in Texas. So I'll let you know when we broadcast that show.
That's the Brain Health Group over here in
Correct.
Texas, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, Correct.
Yeah, Sandy Chapman, yeah, they're doing a lot of good things, yeah.
Well, sir, it's been wonderful. We're out of time. Any messages you'd like to share with our listeners before you go?
Well, hopefully the veterans that are listening out there, I just can't. I'm very proud to be part of that part of my life to be a veteran, and I hope and pray that you are happy with your families and you're doing the good things in the private sector as you did for us in the military. Take care.